of the feast, by the side of the cross.
Slavery has existed since prehistory and has existed in numerous cultures throughout the world. Although slavery is often stigmatized as being archaic and backward, slavery has been found in many of the most progressive societies. Hunter-gatherers and primitive farmers didn't have any use for slaves, since they only grew enough food for themselves and wouldn't want to feed another mouth other than that of a family member. With civilizations, we find that there is a pattern of a warrior caste arriving and dominating a conquered people who must do the more menial tasks in the society, so they become serfs. As people gather in cities and towns and can be fed through the large surplus of food that mass agriculture allows, it becomes possible to develop a range of crafts. Cheap labour, costing no more than the minimum of food and lodging, was crucial to this. Slaves were taken during brutal wars, where the most useful of the conquered people would be kept and the others often killed. Piracy and kidnap were other ways to get slaves, and slavery was also a punishment for criminality or debt. In many places around the world today, impoverished parents sell their own children into slavery, and this would have happened in ancient times to some extent also. Some people are more inclined to sell their children or themselves into slavery, and especially into prostitution, than others, of course. Sometimes ancient people have rather killed themselves than suffer such indignities, such as ancient Germanic women facing capture by Romans. In Babylon, there were three social classes, with slaves being the lowest. These slaves were still allowed to own property, and a male slave could marry a free woman, and their children would be considered free. Sparta and Athens depended greatly upon slaves. In the case of Sparta, these were the Helots who previously occupied Sparta before being dominated by the next wave of warriors. In fact, the Helots were Messenians and were a Hellenic, Doric people themselves. They were unfortunate in being dominated by other Dorics. The other Greek city-states felt that it was immoral to enslave and to dominate other Hellenes, and they only enslaved non-Hellenes, such as Ionians. The Hellenic tradition was that only non-Hellenic Greeks with black hair and barbarians were slaves. But people such as the Ionians, who had become the majority, were slaves. Other Greeks thought the Spartans were immoral in enslaving the Messenians, such as Helots, as I've said before, because they were a brown-haired Hellenic people. Athens had democracy, and Sparta, by contrast, had a dictatorship. Life for a slave was preferable in Sparta in many respects, if you consider the comfort and the ease of life, than it would be to be a Spartan person. They could get drunk, they could sleep under a roof, which Spartans weren't allowed to do till the age of 16. They were allowed a family life, they could sleep with their wives, in contrast with the Spartans, who had a tradition where the men had to sneak in to see their wives, and where, if they were caught by the relatives, they would be beaten up. Spartan boys had to kill a slave to get them used to the idea of killing. So a slave might just be innocently going along to pick an apple off a tree or something, and then they would just get a spear thrown through them. The slaves didn't much care for this kind of treatment, but they didn't have a lot of choice in it. They were kept in line by the secret police, or cryptia, as they were known. At one point, the slaves did have a revolution. They did manage to get their act together and try and threaten the Spartans. Calling it a revolution isn't quite right, I mean a revolt. The slave revolt followed a massive earthquake that destroyed most of the city of Sparta. The Spartans asked neighbouring city-states, including Athens, to come in and help them to put down the slave revolt. But it didn't take very long after the Athenians arrived for the Spartans to ask them to leave, because the Spartans really didn't care much for the Athenians. They really hated democracy, and they felt that the Athenians would be influencing the population to become more pro-democratic, and they felt threatened by this, so they felt they had to ask them to leave. Also, there was the fear that the Athenians might well change sides and start to support the slaves, and the Athenians were very offended by this. Athens had only backed Sparta up in the first place with the slave revolt because they felt that Sparta would be a good ally for them. But in the end, because of this snub, Athens decided to go to war against Sparta, and this was the cause of the Great Peloponnese War, lasting for 27 years. Sparta was victorious. There was very little slavery in ancient Egypt. There's no evidence that there was ever a slave market there at all. And there were no enslaved Israelites, and certainly the pyramids were not built by slaves at all, but built by volunteers who were very honoured to take part in building these sacred structures. In ancient Greece, generally, the slaves were more numerous than the free people. They worked as domestic servants, factory workers, shopkeepers, mine workers, and ship's crew, for example. A slave who was an architect could demand a high wage for his services. But on the opposite extreme, the life of a mine worker or ship's crewman was fraught with misery and danger. It was the custom to condemn slaves to those tasks as a punishment that would be amounting to a death penalty. Women slaves often became close friends, confidants of their mistresses, as would some male slaves with their masters. Generally, they'd be treated with a lot of consideration within the household, although sexual exploitation was fairly common. If a female slave became pregnant by her owner, she would have to get rid of it, or it would be got rid of anyway. The slaves were not allowed to rear offspring nor to marry, as this was the privilege of the elite. The ancient Romans were always debating what rights slaves should have. For example, they decided on the death penalty for running away, but slaves were allowed to basically go to pubs or taverns. Fear of a slave revolt, obviously, and means that you treat your slaves well, unless you take the Spartan route and decide to make all your civilians into warriors, where it's almost like a game to try and keep the slaves in place and kill them when they step out of line. But if you're going to have a slave in a decadent sort of a way, as a servant or anything like that, then clearly you want someone who would be pleasant to have around, who would be friendly, and who's not going to stab you in the back, that sort of thing. So they generally would treat their slaves well, just for practical reasons like that, as much as anything else. There are records of Romans complaining that slaves are taking too much time in the taverns and not doing their work properly. So this makes you wonder, really, whether you'd really consider such people to be slaves. But yeah, they would be disadvantaged, obviously, with the position that there were some very fundamental human rights, as one might call it, that they were denied. The Roman Marcus Tullus Cicero, who's most famous for his political and philosophical writings, had a faithful slave called Tiro, who was an extremely close and trusted friend, and was his secretary and editor. Tiro published a number of Cicero's speeches, which we would not have had today had he not done so. He himself wrote a biography of Cicero, as well as a book on grammar and philosophical questions. It seems to me that the reason that Cicero didn't grant Tiro his freedom right up until the time that Cicero was going to die was that he so valued Tiro and loved him as a friend that he just wouldn't want to risk losing him by granting him his freedom. Perhaps it's not that hard to imagine how he felt. Slavery was always big business, and just as the Jews have dominated money lending, it's fair to say that slave trading has been one of their other characteristic businesses. You can find out more about this if you just check out jewishencyclopedia.com. There are plenty of references to it. An interesting part is where it says, "With the rise of Islam, large opportunities were afforded to the Jews to supply Muslim slaves to the Christian world and Christian slaves to that of Islam." And Ibn Cordabe, in the ninth century, describes two routes by which Jewish slave dealers carried such slaves from west to east and from east to west. The origin of the word slave is interesting. It's derived from the word Slav, because the Slavs became slaves around the beginning of the 9th century when the Holy Roman Empire tried to stabilize a German Slav frontier. So it was from that time that the word Slav became synonymous with the word slave. Gregory W. Frux writes that it may come as a surprise that European history is filled with slavery. Most of us know that classical Greece, the Roman Empire, and the Muslim caliphates were slave states, but slavery was also common in the Middle Ages. It existed in Visigothic Spain, Merovingian France, among the Vikings, and in the Italian city-states. Orlando Patterson estimates that in the year 950 AD, between 10% and 15% of Europeans were bound in servitude. The first Russian state emerged in this cruel and violent time. The civilized empires of the Mediterranean were slave states. In the north, barbarian raiders carried off people as pillage. The Vikings in particular abducted and enslaved people from Ireland to Russia for their use and for sale. The Vikings took so many Scottish slaves, particularly women, to Iceland that it's now been found out from DNA tests that 60% of women in Iceland have basically got Scottish DNA. These women would have been willingly taken as wives rather than forced to become pregnant or raped or anything like that. This would have had such an impact on the ethnicity of the Icelanders that it would be sufficient to explain why they so willingly accepted Christianity.
Yeah.
2007 marks 200 years since Britain abolished the transatlantic slave trade. While Britain made such a humanitarian step, we and everyone else of European origin are continually made to feel guilt over slavery and to perceive it as something that the majority of white people did to the majority of black people. The fact is, of course, that few white people ever owned slaves. Only a rich and privileged minority, also only a tiny minority of the blacks at the time, ever became slaves. In addition, slave trading by Africans and Jews was and continues to be rife. Today there are officially 12 million people worldwide who are slaves. That information is from antislavery.org. But they also state that there are 126 million kids in work harmful to their health and welfare. These people are sold like objects, forced to work for a little or no pay, and are at the mercy of their employers. These would include the many thousands of hapless women forced into working in brothels in supposedly civilized Western nations. This is despite the fact that Article 4 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights states, "No one shall be held in slavery, and the slave trade shall be prohibited in all their forms." The first slaves in the US were in fact white. It should be mentioned that the Native Americans were not usable as slaves because they had too much of a wild spirit and would not do as they were told. Anyway, back to the white slaves. These unfortunates had a lot harder a time than did the African slaves. Many of the African slaves were much loved by the families that they served, and they hated the idea of being free. Michael A. Hoffman II has written much about whites in servitude in early America and in industrial Britain. Children worked nearly naked in mines of 19th century Britain. Here's an excerpt regarding slavery in America. "The establishment has created the misnomer of indentured servitude to explain away and minimize the fact of white slavery, but bound whites in early America called themselves slaves. 9/10 of the white slavery in America was conducted without indentures of any kind, but according to the so-called custom of the country, as it was known, which was lifetime slavery administered by the white slave merchants themselves. In George Sandy's laws for Virginia, whites were enslaved forever. The service of whites bound to Berkeley's Hundred was deemed perpetual. These accounts have been policed out of the much-touted standard reference works, such as Abbott Emerson Smith's laughable whitewash, Colonists in Bondage. I shall challenge any researcher to study 17th century colonial America, sifting the documents, the jargon, and the statutes on both sides of the Atlantic, and one will discover that white slavery was a far more extensive operation than black enslavement. It is when we come to the 18th century that one begins to encounter more servitude on the basis of a contract of indenture. But even in that period, there was kidnapping of Anglo-Saxons into slavery, as well as convict slavery. In 1855, Frederick Law Olmsted, the landscape artist who designed New York's Central Park, was in Alabama on a pleasure trip and saw bales of cotton being thrown from a considerable height into a cargo ship's hold. The men tossing the bales somewhat recklessly into the hold were Negroes. The men in the hold were Irish. Olmsted inquired about this to a ship worker. "Oh," said the worker, "the niggers are worth too much to be risked here. If the paddies are knocked overboard or get their backs broke, nobody loses anything." There's a misconception that the American Civil War was a war to free slaves. It wasn't. In fact, even to call it a civil war is inaccurate, since the war was really a war over the secession of the southern states. Supposedly, the southern states were evil for supporting slavery. There are many organisations in the US today who argue that the Confederate battle flag is offending to African Americans and should be banned because, they say, it commemorates slavery. This is as ridiculous as the notion that the swastika is all about racial hatred or genocide. It would have been wholly unnecessary to wage a 4-year war to abolish slavery in the US. A war that destroyed a generation of American men and devastated half the country, especially since every other country but Haiti that had slaves, examples Argentina, Bolivia, Brazil, Chile, Colombia, Cuba, Ecuador, Mexico, Peru, Uruguay, and Venezuela, freed their slaves entirely peacefully. There were many signs that slavery in the US was going to disappear peacefully anyway. Effectively, the war initiated a process of centralization of government that has substantially restricted liberty and freedom in America, while often reluctant Africans were freed into poverty. Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation during the Civil War was a war measure purely for strategic purposes. He proposed that only the slaves in pro-Confederate states would be forcibly freed, their rights to own slaves being forfeited as a punishment for seceding from the Union. So slave owners in Missouri, Kentucky, Maryland, Delaware, Tennessee, and parts of Virginia were exempt and could keep slaves. The London Spectator put in its October 11th, 1862 issue, "The principle is not that a human being cannot justly own another, but that he cannot own him unless he is loyal to the United States." Lincoln proposed that these slaves in the Union states would be freed gradually over a 37-year period, with these owners being paid compensation. He also insisted that the free slaves must be deported to Latin America and Africa. However, Congress rejected Lincoln's proposals, even though it was strongly felt by the Northern abolitionists that slaves should be freed but not left to live alongside them. It's quite ironic to think that these supposed anti-slave fighters were anti-slave in the sense that they didn't want to see Africans around the US at all. They were certainly betrayed, having been tricked into unwittingly serving the agenda of racial integration. But Charles Dickens, the famous English author and social commentator, explained the real reasons behind the Civil War when he said, "Union means so many millions a year lost to the South. Secession means the loss of the same millions to the North. The love of money is at the root of this, as of many other evils. The quarrel between the North and South is, as it stands, solely a fiscal quarrel." And none other than Karl Marx himself backs this view up. Marx says, "The war between the North and the South is a tariff war. The war is, further, not for any principle, does not touch the question of slavery, and in fact turns on the Northern lust for sovereignty." Slavery is still going on, both in the historical sense and also increasingly in the sense that working for money can amount, in most cases, to little other than wage slavery. Employees have rights such as the right to have a family or not to be killed for refusing to work, but then we find that work is generally necessary in order to live anyway. And we cannot be at all sure that at some point we will have many of the human rights we take for granted taken from us. Really, as I have mentioned before, slaves perform best when they are kept reasonably content. Being allowed a certain level of protection and self-indulgence can serve this purpose. Compare the present work hours to the hours worked in hunter-gatherer societies. They only worked a few hours a day to find food. People in civilization have to work to feed a monster, the economy. People want to earn enough money to buy all sorts of products that are erroneously associated with pleasure or necessity. This whole process is like an evil genie that's escaped from its bottle, and we can't put it back. At least if you live in a nationalist state, it should be the case that labour is not slavery, as it all goes to improve the strength of your country and improve the lot of your people. In this sense, we can say, Arbeit macht frei, and we can understand the benefit of a work ethic. The situation couldn't be more different when, as is the case for us now, we are coerced into working for internationalist corporations and for a state that has globalist ambitions based upon maximum profiteering by a psychopathic minority. The more we work to that aim, the more enslaved we become. Slaves work for other people, not for themselves or for their own kind.